Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and here's a taste of what we'll be talking about today. As we lead up to the start of the 50th International Eucharistic Congress in Dublin, one of the volunteers on the ground talks about what motivates her and what she expects. An interreligious forum in Marrakesh explores how spirituality and mysticism can provide a meeting place for religions in the heart of their religious life. And Peter Malone talks about a film that is a portrait and a tribute to Burmese pro-democracy leader Aung San Suu Kyi. In 6 days' time, the 50th International Eucharistic Congress in Dublin will be welcoming faithful from across the world. At the heart of the Congress, which normally takes place every 4 years, is the daily celebration of the Eucharist. Its wider programme includes other liturgical events, cultural events, catechesis, testimonies and workshops. The gathering aims to promote an awareness of the central place of the Eucharist in the life and mission of the Catholic Church, as well as help improve our understanding and celebration of the liturgy and draw attention to the social dimension of the Eucharist. Of course, many people are involved in the organisation of the Congress and in the everyday running of it, as it takes place for 10 full days. Eva McCarthy, who will be attending the Dublin Congress for Vatican Radio, spoke to one of the 2,000 volunteers who are working to make sure everything runs smoothly. She is Julia Vaughan, drawn from across the generations of Irish Catholics and from all walks of Irish life. She tells Ema that she is more than happy to give of her time and energy.
My reaction was huge because I really have a great love for the Church, for the outreach that is necessary to bring people together. And when I was asked at a meeting to be a representative for our church, oh, I thought, what? At that time, I had just signed up to do a theology course, and I thought, what does this involve, and how much time? And I thought, oh, it's crossing him. But within 5 minutes, I said, right. And my first encounter with Father Kevin was when there was a group established to meet in the south side of Dublin, representing the parishes there. And he gave us a rundown of what was happening and laid emphasis on the input from Vatican II, in the sense that our Archbishop had looked at the possibility of themes and drew from Lumen Gentium, communion with Christ and with one another. And this was accepted by the Holy Father. And the Holy Father, actually, when he announced that the Congress would be in Dublin, he announced that at the last Congress in Quebec in 2008. And his words at that time was that he would hope that it would be a time of renewal for the Irish Church. I just felt this is what Ireland needs, though many felt it was the wrong time. With hindsight, it was a blessing. And it was the intervention of the Lord, I think, as he always has done in history. When the church is in trouble, we need something to bring us back.
But let's start at the very beginning, Julia. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to become one of the 2,000 people who will be the army of volunteers for this ecclesial event.
Well, I myself have retired, and I am absolutely thrilled to be involved with the Congress. And to be involved as a volunteer gives you an opportunity of doing something concrete and positive for the church, to be of service to one another and to keep going until we literally drop. It is very important that we give and receive, and that we have a love for one another and an understanding of God's love for us. He is the one who loved us first. And to be part of that and to be an example for others insofar as we can and to bring them with us is the message of the gospel. And it is wonderful that everything is happening, and the 50th anniversary as well of the Vatican Council. And that was a wonderful time in the church, and we have to return to it. And our own Archbishop and the Pope were happy that the theme for the Congress was taken from the documents of Vatican II, in particular Lumen Gentium.
There's just under 2 months to the beginning of Congress now in Dublin. And as I said earlier, you are one of the 2,000 people who have answered the call to be volunteers for this Congress. You have been busily preparing over the last 2 years. Can you speak to us perhaps about the type of people who are volunteering?
Well, you'll be surprised to know that I was at one of the training sessions last Saturday, facilitating, and I met two gentlemen, one who was 1 year old at the last Congress and the other who was 4 year old at the last Congress. And I marvelled that they were prepared to be present for 5 days during the Congress. And I said, will you be able for the hours? Yes, most certainly we will. So that really shows what determination, strength of purpose, and obviously God-filled lives can engender. There are many people who are young students and are giving of their summer vacation. Other people are nurses, doctors, etc., who have taken the week off at their own expense. Many are from the country, and they are coming up to find accommodation in Dublin and are delighted to give up their time to this great cause.
Now, of course, one of the main tasks for volunteers will be to ensure the smooth running of the Congress. They are really going to be the hands-on people for all pilgrims taking part in this week-long event. I mean, you need to stress it's over an entire week. Many of these pilgrims, hopefully, will also not be necessarily from Ireland, but will be coming from other countries. Can you talk to us a little bit about the welcome that foreign pilgrims to Congress can expect from volunteers from Dublin and from Ireland and the Irish people in general?
Well, the Irish people generally have a good welcome for everybody, and we're only dying to meet our volunteers from abroad, and they will receive a great cave meal of falter. And there is a warmth that we want to extend to people, because that comes from the heart and the heart. And there will be room in every house to facilitate these people, and there will be support during each day, and we will support one another.
Julia, what are your hopes for this Congress?
My hope for this Congress is that the true spirit and theme of the Congress will become a reality for all. Communion with Christ and with one another. And that really means being all things to all men, to have a love for people, and to realize that we are all temples of the Holy Spirit. We receive the spirit of baptism. We're empowered by it as confirmation. And we are fed and nourished by the bread of life. And in becoming what we receive, we give that out to others. We're more understanding of other people if we see them as temples of the Holy Spirit. We will not be unkind. We will see others' point of view. And we won't carry grudges. So reconciliation should flow, we hope, from this Congress.
The second meeting of the Grand Hermès Forum for Interreligious Study of the Mystical and Spiritual Life, a project of the Elijah Interfaith Academy, was held in March in Marrakesh. On its webpage, I read that the concept for the forum grew out of the understanding that mysticism and spirituality occupy important places in the lives of believers of all faiths. Spirituality and mysticism, it explains, potentially provide a meeting place for religions in the heart of their religious life, rather than on the common battlefield of life. So the Grand Hermès Forum for the Interreligious Study of Mystical and Spiritual Life seeks to deepen reflection on the range of questions associated with both mysticism and spirituality as bridges and meeting points between religions. Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright, who was invited to participate in the Marrakesh Symposium, told me of his experience.
In March, I was invited to attend a meeting of the Grand Hermès Forum for Interreligious Study of the Mystical and Spiritual Life, which was being hosted by Grand Hermès in his house or palace in the middle of Marrakesh. And we were put up in the small traditional hotels nearby. And of course, being in a Muslim country and being in a country of great antiquity and beauty, it was already going to be a wonderful experience. The theme of this three-day meeting was to compare notes on the teaching of the six major world religions on getting started in prayer and maintaining a habit in prayer. The six world religions represented, of course, were Buddhism, Christianity, Hinduism, Islam, Judaism, and Sikhism. All the participants were experts in their own field with renowned reputations in the spirituality of their own faith. I was meeting them for the first time. They'd had an earlier meeting last year, and so many of them knew each other from that. There were 18 of us, that is to say, roughly three from each of these main world religions, and we had plenary sessions, and then we met up in group sessions. In the group sessions, there would be six, roughly one from each of the main world religions. Before the meeting started, we were asked to provide a text to illustrate our own teaching or our own views on the two issues, getting started in prayer and maintaining a tradition or a habit of prayer during daily life. Those texts were printed out and published, and everyone had copies of them, and each was asked to comment on the texts of the others. And indeed, the author who chose the text would write her or his own comment. The meeting was, for me, was very rewarding. Firstly, because to be in the presence of people who are deeply committed to a spiritual life, who clearly live a life of prayer and a sense of perpetual recollection of the presence of God, is something which is moving in itself. As we all faiths know, as soon as you accept a deity or you accept the possibility of transcendence, walls disappear and you're into a world of mysticism, of silence, of presence, a sense of contemplative richness. And in that environment, there is also a sense of respect for the other and a respect for what she or he has to say and the insights they provide. And certainly in my group, I was very fortunate. We had a wonderful Hindu, wonderful Sikh, a wonderful Jewish person, Jewish lady, all from whom I got a huge amount just listening to them. It was a new experience because I'd never been before where you were sharing on a level of spirituality in a medium of intuition, of articulating experience which is beyond words, of a faith, of a trust which is strong both in its present foundations and in its desire for a fulfillment, which of course brings the energy for people to not only provide the text, but also to provide the commentary on these texts from their own experience. And I found the whole meeting and the individual conversations that I had with members of these different faiths a really enriching moment. It brought home to me how beyond the teachings and doctrines and customs and organizations of these different religions, there is deep within the heart of every human believer in the divine and in the transcendence of the human experience, a unified desire for something much greater than this world could ever give. And it is that desire which for Christians and Muslims and Jews comes out of the revelation of God through scripture, and for others comes partly through revelation of scriptures, partly through an ability to deepen an experience through contemplative and silence and a sense of inwardness, penetrating to a depth of experience which goes beyond the normal exchange of daily living. So from these different perspectives, we're not there in any sense of trying to produce an agreed statement, let alone an agreed method, let alone a sense that we're all one, because we're not. We come from different traditions. We've lived our own tradition, developed our own sense of the wonder of the spiritual and the, for some of us, the wonder of the revealing God, and for others of us, of a sense of the transcendence of human life and the value of human life in itself. And it is that appreciation of the spiritual dimension, which a world which is to some extent dominated by a materialism and by a functionalism, is shown to be somewhat fragile. And to be able to meet others from different traditions arriving at that same conclusion was in itself an enriching and encouraging experience. After 3 days, the group had come together as in friendship, in mutual appreciation, as I say, but also was then committed to trying to take the whole experience forward through a website promoted by the Elijah Interfaith Institute, based in Jerusalem, and to put on the website these texts that each of us had provided with comments from each other on those texts, so that we can build up a much wider group of people interested precisely in the spiritual life. Again, to encourage people that prayer, contemplative prayer, the search for God or the search for ultimate meaning, the search for union with the Creator Spirit, however one wants to describe it, is indeed possibly, really, truly, the most important element of our human existence. And it will give value to that existence in whatever position one finds oneself. And I suppose that in that sharing, there are always echoes that one can pick up from another, which affirm things of one's own. But it's not, and I stress this, it's not a question of saying everything's the same. It's a question of saying that in the difference that we are, and the differences, and they are important differences, there is behind all that a human spirit that's seeking a fulfillment. And that fulfillment will be achieved in true paths trodden by thousands, millions of people over the history of our human life. And it is my hope that as this sort of exchange of experience, this sort of dialogue continues, that each one becomes ever more appreciative of the other. And through that appreciation is that little bit more respectful of the other, that bit's more magnified in their understanding of the meaning of life and the grandeur of God.
That was Benedictine Abbot Timothy Wright. Vatican Radio's film critic Peter Malone talks to me about a film that he says he is glad he saw. It's entitled The Lady, and it's director Luc Besson's portrait and tribute to Aung San Suu Kyi, one of the most significant public figures of the late 20th, early 21st century, a strong woman and political leader. as you say right at the end of your review, the film was completed before the election results of 2011, but it's extremely topical at this moment on the world stage, isn't it?
Well, just some short time ago, Aung San Suu Kyi actually took her seat in the Burmese parliament, and I think she has 40 members in her party. So when you think of the 25 years or more that she experienced house arrest, it's been an extraordinary change, and whatever's going to happen to Burma seems to be a greater acceptance, especially by the United States. I notice Australia's dropping some of the sanctions. There may be change, and I think she has become one of the 20th century heroic political figures, really.
Absolutely. You say that you are glad that you saw this film and that you were moved by it.
Yes, you know headlines and you hear news reports, or there might be documentaries, but this really is, I would suggest, a portrait of her, therefore not a complete picture. I noticed some of the people commenting, you know, that it didn't do justice to the political background of Burma from the 1940s and the revolution in the 1960s and the military takeover. But I think you go and see documentaries for that. And I don't think it's, you know, it's not a thorough biography either. But it does present Aung San Suu Kyi very much as a woman, as a wife and a mother, as well as a political leader. And I found it very moving, really.
Violence has erupted on the streets of Rangoon.
It does follow a chronological order. It starts with the assassination of her father, who actually fought and won the independence for Burma. So she was seen as the only woman who could continue in the struggle for freedom.
You are the only person who can lead Burma into democracy now.
But she had to leave the country after his assassination in 1947. And so she was living in England, and she married an Englishman. So the film, after that introduction, actually takes us to 1998, when he has terminal cancer. And then it goes back 10 years to when Aung San Suu Kyi had to go back to Burma when her own mother was terminally ill.
How long are you going to be away?
A week, or maybe two.
And, of course, she couldn't leave after that. And while she was there, people appealed to her to form a party and to lead them politically.
Your father fought and won independence for Burma. Here's an opportunity to finish what he began.
So it goes through the 10 years from 88 to 98 again.
Aung San Suu Kyi, housewife and mother of two, emerged today as Burma's bright new hope for the future.
Especially the struggles, the behaviour of the generals, then her internment in her own house, persecution of her followers.
They were picking people up and taking them away.
Where are they taking me?
Some visits from her husband and her two sons from England, but eventually by the mid-90s, they weren't allowed to do that either.
You are free to choose your husband and children or your country.
And what kind of freedom is that?
So there's a sadness there when her husband dies and she's not able to be by his side in his final illness. But they had agreed that she had to stay in Burma, because otherwise, if she left, she wouldn't be allowed back and they would lose all the momentum.
We have always shared a common dream for Burma. I have always considered it to be the very thing that bound us.
So, in a sense, that's the drama, but it's also the portrait, and especially from 1988 to 1998.
It was her husband who put her name forward for the Nobel Peace Prize, which she actually was awarded in 1991.
Yes, that's a significant part of the film. You see him in his approaches to people, and the suggestion is preparing the dossier for the Nobel Prize Committee.
There's still no sign that the Burmese military will release Aung San Suu Kyi.
We, her family, are denied any contact with her whatsoever.
And the announcement, and I don't know whether this happened quite the same way in reality, but she was able to listen to the broadcast from Oslo, even though there was a blackout, but her friend and associate in the house was able to find some batteries, so they're able to pick up the ceremony where her older son made the speech.
People.
The Nobel Prize laureate Aung San Suu Kyi.
If you die, your people...
So, again, quite some moving moments in the film itself and reminding us that she got the Nobel Peace Prize.
Obviously, the film couldn't be filmed in Burma, but you say that the locations in Thailand do give the film a feel for the people and the Burmese history.
Yes, it's just across the border, so I suppose it's six of one, half a dozen of the other in terms of Burma and Thailand. Though I'll tell you what, I got a big shock over 20 years ago going to a museum in Bangkok, and I hadn't realised the hostility over centuries between the Thais and the Burmese. But I suppose with the last decades, there's been some kind of rapport, especially people coming over the border into Thailand. But yes, it was filmed in Thailand, and the actress herself is Malaysian.
She looks very much like Aung San Suu Kyi.
Doesn't she? You would think she was, you know, the real person. It's Michelle Yeoh who... has been in a lot of martial arts films over the years, even a James Bond film, but I thought she brought such dignity to this performance of Aung San Suu Kyi, her manner, her walk, mode of dressing, her way of speaking.
Every day brings new atrocities.
Almost flawless, perhaps almost like a saint. And just when you're thinking that, she has a discussion about her faults and that she's not a saint. But on the other hand, she has, I suppose, manifested over the decades a consistency of behaviour which is highly moral, highly good, an excellent person.
That's all from the English feature programme today, and from me, Linda Bordoni. But we will be back at this same time tomorrow, so join us then. You can listen to our programmes on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.